views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Well, y'all, another episode of BIB Radio. That's BIB, Blacks in Business Radio. Tonight is Thursday, and we have an interesting lineup for you guys tonight. So this is Brother Robert 11X, accompanied by my beautiful, wonderful, I don't want to call her the co-host because she is the host of the show. I am the co-host. CeCe Harry will be joining us shortly. Tonight is going to be a pretty interesting show. We have, on the first hour, we will talk to a brother, Mansa Musa, from Ethiopia. Okay, y'all, we're getting international with this thing. Representing Bear Holding Group and E-Squared International LLC. We're going to learn about international trade, import and export, and also continue the conversation about trade shows, which, you know, I just really love trade shows. Anything about trade shows, Brother Robert 11X loves to talk about that, you know. So we definitely, as a people, need to, especially entrepreneurs, need to know the value of trade shows. And we're going to get some real good lessons tonight on that. On the second hour, okay, we got a sister, Khadija, and I hope I say this right, Makdi, Sister Khadija Makdi. Her company, Return to Favor Home Care, is fast becoming a staple in the community in St. Louis, Missouri. She has an LLC, and is starting this business with her daughter, Aisha, and I hope I pronounced that right. We will learn the ins and outs of owning such a business. So this is going to be a pretty good lineup today because, the home health care, I went through some time in my life, about 7 years, I was taking care of my grandmother. I had no idea of what opportunities or what help was out there for me because I'm a man and I'm not in the healthcare industry. And as an entrepreneur, you know, I just didn't know about what could have been aided to me, you know, what could have came my way in terms of some help. So I'm glad we got the sister on. I'm glad we got the brother on. But I just hope that everybody that has tuned in or is going to tune in, when you tune in, that you're in good spirits and that you had a very successful day. There's a lot going on out here. And, man, there's so much we could talk about on that note, you know, but there's just so much going on out here. So we want to definitely, I want to say to you all, you know, don't argue, you know. If you get in a situation, your road rage type of situation, don't argue. Just let it go and keep going. And don't even pay that next person no attention because the goal every morning that you get up should be to make it home safely to your children and to your family. You know what I'm saying? So definitely, y'all, avoid the drama and stay calm and hold your tongue and just make it home to your family. You know, I'm saying that because I'm looking at news and I'm talking to people, you know, and all kind of stuff is happening. And a lot of times we're getting too emotional and reacting rather than responding to these type of situations. So definitely just respond and not react, and respond in a mathematical, intelligent way to these type of situations, fam, because people out here really, they don't care right now. So, you know, I don't know. I'm not in front of the switchboard. I was hoping to see if our first guest was on the line. His name is Mansa Musa. And Scotty, is he there or not?
Yes, he's been there waiting patiently since before we came on air. So I'll go ahead and unmute his mic, and you can welcome him on to BIB Radio.
Okay. Brother Mansa Musa.
Peace and blessings. How's it going, brother?
Oh, my brother, peace and blessings unto you as well. And it's going quite well over here for me, you know, as well as I, in my mind, see it to be, you know. So, and I see it as an excellent time for us. CC was telling me a lot about what you're doing, and I would like for you to open up by telling our audience what it is that you bring to the table of entrepreneurship. What do you do?
Oh, man, I do international trade, import, export, and tourism. Primarily, I do it with African countries to the United States. And I started this about 25 years ago and never looked back since. You know, I get to travel around the world. I get to go see all different parts of the motherland and then come back to the U.S. and go to trade shows all over the United States. And it's just exciting. I love it.
Wow. So tell us about how did you – start in business? Where did you start your business at? And what inspired you first to go into business? And then what was the first business you went into? Tell us about your history.
Okay, all right. I had my uncle and my dad and grandfather all were historians. And so they had me reading all these books. And I was reading stories about Madam C.J. Walker and Mansa Kanganga Musa and the Swahili traders and the Queen of Sheba going up and down the Nile and all this stuff. And I just said to myself, wow, I said, this sounds like the kind of business I could do, you know, in the future. So, it you know, that kind of put the seed in my mind. And so as I was going through school, I would take different business classes and trade classes and DECA, distributive education class, all this kind of stuff, just to kind of get a feel for, you know, what these people were doing and, you know, in the history books. And so I started some small little lawn care businesses when I was a kid, but when I went to junior college, one of the professors was doing international trade of restaurant equipment. And me and him had a conversation, and I said, I think, you know, this is kind of in my family history and so on and so forth. I said, I think I can do this with you. So I went into business with him. I think that was my first real real business try at that point.
Oh, wow. So now when you say you went to school, was that where you from, or did you go to school here in the United States?
I'm from the United States. My family's from the Nottoway Plantation in Louisiana and the Franklin Plantation in North Carolina.
Oh, okay, because I'm reading here about Ethiopia. Okay, where does it say? It was saying that Mansa Musa from Ethiopia, and that's I thought you were from Ethiopia, but nevertheless, so what does international trade look like? Explain to the people what that really is.
Hey, I'm sorry, Robert.
Okay, so.
And Mr. Musa, but I think she meant joining us from Ethiopia. I don't know if he's in Ethiopia. I know he's on the continent of Africa. And for the listeners, that explains some of the scratchy audio from him. But we can hear you perfectly, but long, very long distance from where our exchange is. So I think that's what was meant in the write-up, Brother Robert, that he's joining us from the continent.
Oh,
that's
right.
Okay.
That's
what you meant.
Okay, good, good, good. Because I'm reading that, and I was like, okay. Well, but nevertheless, so please tell us what the international trade, what that really looks like, because, you know, I go to these trade shows and I've had experience with different vendors that may be over in China, mainly in China. But then here lately, there have been a lot of African vendors at these particular trade shows, such as the Magic trade show, which is the clothing trade shows. And we're seeing more of our people from Africa joining into this trade. So for the people, because people don't even know about trade shows, let alone you're talking about international trade. So give us,
that's right,
in the most elementary way, an ideal of what international trade looks like or what it is.
Okay. International trade is one of the oldest two businesses or industries on the planet Earth. Okay. And basically what it is you got one group of people that live on the farmland, and you got one group of people that live on the ocean. Okay. The people on the farmland, they got grain and rice and fruit, and the people on the ocean, they got fish. All right. So the people who have fish, they want to trade 50% of their fish for 50% of the other commodities. So now the fish people got fruit and grain, and the grain people got fish to eat. And so that's basically what trade is. And so whatever resource you got at hand is what you're supposed to be utilizing for trading. That's your value. You know, and so this is what we talk about economics. It's the ecology, the land, or the land or the water, and what's in the land and water that you're on is so important. So like when people say real estate's important, you know, what they really should be saying is the land is so important, because you can put houses on the land, you can dig oil out the land, you can grow fruit out the land and use that for trade. All right. Can I elaborate?
Go ahead.
Okay. All right. So one of the challenges that's happening is you see nations always fighting, and you see Trump saying there's unfair trade, he says, because if you're a group of people and you're not doing trade, you're going to have a trade deficit. Or the people you're dealing with, if you're just buying from them but you're not trading from them, you're giving them something and they're giving you something, okay, whether it's money or something else that you need, then you're going to have a trade deficit. So since colonization and the enslavement period about, 400 years ago or so, there's been a continuous beat down and decline for African people around the world, all the Africans on the continent and in the diaspora, of trade. So what we've been doing right now, we just became consumers. All we do is we just give our money to other people, but we don't get anything in exchange. So even though African Americans make $1.5 trillion per year, they give it all to Europeans and Asians and don't get anything in return. So we're really rich and powerful, but we're just giving our wealth away.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I saw, with this movie that just came out, Black Panther, and I happened to see the breakdown in the wealth in the movie, and this was just 2 days ago. I think they were like $280 million made, I think. And they had said that 37% of that money came from black people. And there was another 34% that came from Caucasian people, and then I think it was other, And so I had put a quote post up on Facebook in reference to we don't have a financial problem. We have a financial literacy problem. You see?
That's right.
And I totally agree with what you just said, because that $1.5 billion that we spend annually, which is probably going to go up even more, it just clearly says to me what you just said. We have some issues that we need to work out as a people. So how I want to know, with you saying what you're saying in terms of the $1.5 billion, how do you see yourself?
Trillion.
Yeah, thank you. $1.5 trillion, right. How do you see what you're doing, or how do you use what you're doing to educate our people towards the opportunities that you have been blessed to come in contact with international trade?
Okay, so, you know, like we were talking about in the beginning, so I was teaching a course at a community college, and I was teaching the students about international trade, African culture, history, and, of course, you know, our commodities. And then I could see that people didn't really understand the concept of our continent with 54 countries and how we're all the same. A lot of the students kept asking me, do they like us in Africa? And I said to them, we got the same face. It's the same person when you go there. So I said to myself, okay, I'm going to take this training, out of the virtual and into the reality. So I started taking students and general people over to Africa to teach them international trade. That's when we developed this program called Ufumbuzi, okay? So, like, when she said, calling from Ethiopia, that's because the first part of the training program, I moved to Ghana for 10 years. And then I fell in love and married a lady in Ethiopia. So I moved there to live with her and my two sons. And I just opened a trade and training center here in Sierra Leone in West Africa. So I'm traveling around doing all these things. So that's why when she's – nobody really knows where I'm from, because anytime they talk to me, I'm in a different country. Okay, so our concept is what we'd like to do is put these economic centers, okay, in every African country and in African communities in the U.S. and Europe. And these economic centers would be international trade centers that work on getting the resources from Africa to the U.S. and vice versa, from the U.S. to Africa. You know, that's the import-export. There's things that we have that they need. There's things that they have that all the world needs. Okay.
Greetings, brothers. Hello. This is Cece. I'm here.
Hey, Cece.
I apologize for my lateness, but I was at my sign language class, and the teacher decided to actually run the class the whole time today, so I got back a little bit late.
No.
Greetings, Brother Robert.
Greetings,
and thank you, Brother Mansa Musa, for joining us, and I appreciate the work that you're doing. That's why, you know, I invited you on the show, of course. Now, you're talking about teaching the students, but let me interrupt for just a minute in that point. You know, when you teach the students here, don't you think a big part of the problem is just kind of a microwave society that we live in? Like, the children do not really understand how things go because they're just used to everything just being right there before them. Like, they don't have to actually see any sort of process. So when you try to teach them a process, you know, it's kind of impossible to do that when you can just give them a bag of popcorn, they put it in the microwave, and then, bam, it's ready to go. You know, they really don't have to understand that there's a process for things to get here and there, a process for things to be made. Do you think that that's part of the issue?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what we decided to do with our program is just go on back to our African traditions. And every single person learns a million different ways. You know, that's one of the problems with the European and the linear teaching, you know, and the holistic teaching. We took the grade students and their parents and some of the teachers, we took them to Ghana. And we showed them the product. So they're walking on the ground, they're smelling the thing, they're seeing the dancing, the sun. The sun is different in Africa. And now all of a sudden they're in a whole different atmosphere. So it shakes them out of this bubble that they got us in Western society. And they come alive. You know, we took some high school students. Same thing. Mm-hmm. They called them at-risk students. I was just laughing. I said, they're at risk of becoming free. And knowing all the resources that's owed to them on this planet, you know, and we took all ages. But I'm telling you, once you step foot, even just out of the U.S., you go to the Caribbean or something. But if you step foot in Africa and see this product being made by old lady's hand, and you know, learning takes a whole different perspective. The thing that they call teaching and learning here is rubbish.
It's robotic. You
know, we can take it back. So I understand why even me, I wasn't really interested in school either until my dad introduced me to African history books. The next thing I know, I've been read 2,500 books. But before that, I was like, look, I don't even know what this is all about. Mm. You know? So we were talking about the 1.5 trillion. This is just African American. This don't include African in other parts of the diaspora, Germany, France, London. And then on the continent, they got $2 trillion worth of buying power. They got 500 plus million cell phone buyers, subscribers, and it grows 1,000% every month or something like that. You know, they got 60% of the world's agricultural uncultivated land. 60% of the land on the planet for food is on our continent. 10% of the world's oil reserves, 40% of the world's gold, okay? 80 to 90% of the world's chromium and platinum metals.
Well, you know, let me get into that, because, you know, a large number of people here don't even understand the importance of the resources. So, you know, the things that you're talking about, again, we kind of live in a microwave society. They don't understand that even, you know, you need precious metals, you need silver for your cell phone to actually work. And they don't understand how it's the silver is being mined by little children and they're being killed. I mean, these things just really have to be broken down so that people understand them, because you just kind of shove information at people and they're just so used to getting it how they're getting it. So I like what you said before about people learning in different ways. And that's definitely true for our people. We don't learn robotically. So it's good that you're introducing this information to us.
Oh, thank you.
So why don't we do this? Let's take a break. Everyone that's listening, thank you so much. You're listening to Blacks in Business Radio. If you'd like to call in, do so at 704-802-5056. If you're listening and you'd like to speak with us, just press **. We're going to go to break right now. We'll be back after these important messages.
Black Talk Media Project would like to invite you to become a member of the BTR Community subscription-based social media platform. BTR Community is a platform that was set up for the listening audience of Black Talk Radio Network, the number one independent Black radio network online. For just $24 per year, your subscription gives you access to an interactive space to share information with like-minded people with your privacy guaranteed. Your subscription will go a long way to help us maintain and improve our current media platforms. It will also help provide a budget so that we can begin the task of establishing localized media centers and radio stations across the United States. The best way to show your support and appreciation for what we do here at Black Talk Radio is to subscribe. Help us to help you be informed. Join BTRCommunity.com today.
All right, I guess we're back now. Yeah, Brother Mansa?
I'm here. Mansa's here. Yes.
Can you hear me now? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah.
Okay, right. I was muted. Okay, yes. All right, so everyone, you're listening to Blacks in Business Radio. We're on Black Talk Radio Network every Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. For our people who are listening, and if you would like to chime in on anything that we're talking about, feel free to just press **, and we will get you right in on the conversation. We are talking to Brother Mansa Musa, who right now, I believe, is, are you in the Ivory Coast right now? Where are you?
Very close, Sierra Leone.
Oh, you're in Sierra Leone. Yes, yes. But he is residing in Ethiopia, going back and forth from the United States to the motherland. And so he is here talking to us about international trade, import, export, and Brother Robert's favorite topic, which is trade shows. So let's continue on in the conversation. We were talking about the children learning, weren't we talking about, let's see, was it the children learning? I think that's where we were.
Yeah, we was right around that area.
The mining of the resources. Yes, that's what we're talking about. Okay, go ahead.
All right. So we were discussing. So the training program we have, like right now, we just opened up a trade center in Sierra Leone.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and so in this in our trade center, we have international trade training, and believe me, the people are hungry for it. And even, I have to say, we've got, like, I think 400 members nationwide, worldwide, and a lot of them are in the U.S., and they're all really eager and excited about learning it and traveling and so on and so forth. So, but in these trade centers, we put in business incubation center, microfinancing, product fulfillment call centers, and then we do our humanitarian projects, both in the U.S. and in Africa. And so right now we've been seeing people really excited about it. You know, I haven't gone back to teach the students yet because I've been opening these centers. But when we were with the youth, they really loved it also.
So let me ask you this question. In terms of, you said with the youth, do you get the most enthusiasm out of the young people, or what ages do you teach? I mean, are you teaching adults as well as young children? And if so, how young is the youngest and up to the oldest?
Okay, now with the Ufumbuzi, it's for grown-ups. So you got to be. Usually our average age is 25 to 70, okay? But, you know, on occasion, we'll go in and do some teaching in a primary school, a high school, or so on, so forth. Put a program together to teach them international trade. And a lot of times what happens, they fly to Africa. They've already designed a product or something at their school. They bring the product to Africa. We take them on a leisure and historical tour. We take them to the ports so they learn how the products leave the country and show them the paperwork that you have to fill out. They drop their product design off with you know, one of the producers there, one of the suppliers, and they get to watch and customize the development of their product to the end. And they go back and forth and tell them, no, we want to change this. And then we show them how to ship it back. And, you know, like the one school we did in Seattle, Washington, They sold their products out of the school store. And so that's better learning. That's better learning than, like Cece was saying, if they're sitting in a classroom like robots. Keep in mind, I mean, we used to have interactive learning, you know, in the African community and in Africa. So that's what's been taken out. But if you do this, you mix in traveling and the latest technology with videos and so on and so forth, everybody likes it. But the main thing that our trade centers are teaching is people 25 to 70 that want to build wealth for their families and unify and connect Africans in the diaspora together. Again, it doesn't make sense. We got all the money in access and networks in the West, and then back on our motherland, we have every known natural resource. So we just need to learn how to link that up. That's what our trade centers are offering right now.
Wow, that's interesting. So I still, I want to be clear because, see, I'm so eager to work with youth. When I say youth, I'm talking, I mean, I've got the best response out of, I'm talking 12-year-old, 13-year-old, youngest being about, I think he was 10 or 11. But I was totally amazed at their being able to adapt in an environment where they're dealing with adults. And I know the cultures are probably hugely, wildly different from America to where you are in terms of, I'm assuming, opportunity. So a young guy over here versus a young guy over there, I mean, the young guys over here that I've had the pleasure of working with, it's just been such a joy because they just really want to prove that they can do this, that they're responsible, that they really want you to see them credible. Now, do you get experience the same thing when you're working with youth, or do you get a better result working with the grown up people?
I get a better result with the youth because the youth are open. You know, they haven't had any kind of set things in their mind. So, no, I mean, with them, it's like magic. I mean, when I take these people to Africa, they absorb and build friends with people. They don't have any hang-ups yet, anything, you know. And, of course, they were born with all this computers. And so since my company is an e-commerce company, they understand doing all this social media marketing, and they understand e-commerce. They were born with it. And so all of this stuff just really flows with them. But what I found with the 25 to 70 group is it just may be a percentage less. You know, the percentage of them is less, but the ones that do, you know, come to it, they love it. And I've had so many people travel back and forth to Africa. Some have moved. Some have gotten married. I mean, the whole gambit. So no matter what, whoever really dives into it loves it. And can I jump on some trade shows? I don't want to miss out on trade shows before we.
Yes.
Before we.
No, you're not going to miss out on anything. We promise. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Talk about the trade shows.
Okay, so here's the other exciting part. Okay, so besides traveling to Africa or doing the tourism business, you make profit from all these things. That's the key. You know, we got to get into the concept of everything we do, we have to make a profit that we're reinvesting back into our community, okay? So sometimes people, they get nervous when you start talking about profit, but we all got to pay the bills. We all got to buy a house, so we got to make the profits, you know?
Right.
So here's the thing. This is what's so amazing, and like you said, here's the hidden secret that they did to us, okay? So ever since the beginning of time, we've been doing international trade. Mansa Musa traveled all the way from West Africa all the way across East Africa, past Egypt, all the way into the Middle East. His grandfathers took ships over to South America, Queen Candace up and down the Nile River, India, and everywhere. I mean, the Swahili travelers all the way to China. Then all of a sudden, this colonial colonization era came, and then we forgot. It's like we forgot everything. And so now, hey, we're free now. We got our blue passport. We can travel anywhere in the world, and we can go to Africa make an agreement with some of our brothers and sisters and take these products. There's a trade show in the United States for every product known to humankind.
Yes, sir.
So you go to this trade show, you pay maybe $2,200 for a booth, okay? Let me give you an example of the money you can make on this day. So, okay, let's say you pay $2,200 for a booth. Some, you end up paying $5,000 for travel, hotel, whatever. And let's say you went to Africa and you bought 5,000 baskets at $10 each. That'll cost you $50,000, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You bring those to the U.S., you sell them for $25 each. That's
$125,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You spent $50,000, so that leaves you $75,000 profit. Let's say you had to spend $25,000 on the booths and different festivals or whatever. That leaves you $50,000 profit. You know, let's say you did that in a 90-day period. That's $150,000 in your pocket per year. Plus, you're giving people in Africa jobs. You're giving people in the U.S. jobs. You got to hire some people to help you at the booth. Now, what's so sweet about these booths? What state is? I know CeCe's in Central, so you must be in.
Robert and I are both CeCe? Are in St. Louis. We're both in St. Louis.
St. Mm-hmm. Louis. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They got a St.
I'm
Louis
from Seattle,
gift show.
But I'm in St. Louis now. Yes.
I knew you from Seattle. That's right. Okay, exactly. All right. Yeah. So you know, we got this the St. Louis gift show. We got the Seattle gift show. Where's the other brother from?
Scotty Reed is in North Carolina.
Okay. North Carolina got North Carolina Furniture Show. It's a huge show. You can be bringing furniture from Africa. Buy it in volume, get a less price, and you bring it to that North Carolina show. You set up a nice booth. You come in whatever kind of clothes. It's warm and nice in the convention center and high class. People come. Only store owners and store buyers are allowed into these wholesale trade shows. Okay, of course, they might have their family member or friend with them, but most 90% of the people that come to your booth, first of all, they're only going to stop if they like your product, so you're not wasting time.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they stop, it's going to be a store owner, okay? Now, this store owner is going to come in, maybe they order a few samples, you know, one at a time to take back to study, and then they eventually going to order 100 units, 1,000 units, 500 units, and they're going to order this on a regular basis. That's what wholesale trade shows are all about. This is what we've been cut off completely from this. And they have wholesale trade shows for – like you say, magic is for the fashion industry. They have a wholesale trade show for coffee. You can go to Ethiopia, get the best coffee bean in the place where coffee originated on the planet Earth. And you can be shipping it to the U.S. and supplying Starbucks and all these people. And we're not doing it. And then
right.
Ghana is the third Ghana is the third cocoa producing country in the world. You got all organic. Everything I'm talking about is organic and handmade. Organic chocolate. We're not shipping our own chocolate like they used to have at Frederick and Nelson's Frangos. We need to have our own Frangos coming out with the all natural. It's so delicious. Okay. All the diamonds and the gold are under our feet, and they got diamond and gold and gemstone trade shows. You just go set up the booth. You don't even have to run around calling people on LinkedIn. You just set up your booth and put your product out there, and the people have been going to these shows for 30, 50, 70, 100 years, these shows have been going on. So
wow.
All the customers are already laid out for you. They got a marketing program written right into the program when you pay your fee, and they market to all the stores for you and show them ahead of time who's coming to, you know, invite them to your booth. I mean, it's just construction equipment. I don't care what it is. You can be shipping this in from one of our African countries. We've got 55 large countries where everything's known to humankind on it, and the trade shows. Okay, so that's the first. That's the high level. Okay, does that beep mean I'm getting cut off?
No, that beep means
no,
my phone
no.
is loud. You have plenty of time. Go ahead.
Okay. So see, now that's the first level of how you can make some good money. That one's a little more expensive to get into. But then the other thing is you got conferences, you got women's conferences, you got black conferences, you got all kind of conferences.
You got church conferences, yeah.
You got church conference, you know. And so one of the next level down is look for a big conference where there's 500 people or more. And then you go in there and you purchase your booth. This one's cheap. Maybe it's $300. And you purchase your booth. You put yourself out there and your flyers. You're selling tours. You're selling your website. You're selling your products. And you can make a killing doing that and get a huge client base, you know. And that's right. Cheaper. Then the next one down is festivals. I used to like to – so I come in – what I was doing before, I just come into the U.S. I do one big trade show. I do one big conference. And then I'll pick some of the best bands that I like or cities and states that I want to go to. If I want to go down to New Orleans, Louisiana, or Atlanta, I pick one of those festivals, big ones, and then go down there and enjoy music for free all day while I'm making money, selling bracelets.
That sounds like you are truly loving what you're doing in entrepreneurship. And, you know, we need to really have like weekly conference calls talking about these things. You know, we talk about trade shows all the time. Well, because, you know, Robert, that's his thing. He totally does trade shows all the time. But as far as like the connection, you know, because a lot of our minds just get kind of blocked. When you talk about going out of the country, some people haven't even been out of their state or city. But when you talk about going out of the country, it's like, oh, a brick wall just comes up and people are like, what? You know, they just can't fathom doing anything outside of the United States. And that's just another set of programming. So I think we need to really set up some like weekly conference calls where we are just kind of bringing people into this information, you know, and if they have questions, just always be available weekly for questions so that they can get this going.
Definitely. I think so too.
I absolutely agree.
But yeah. I got a question for you because I mean, every time we talk trade shows, I just get so excited. And
I'm wondering why you're so quiet. I'm shocked.
Right. Because I remember my very first trade show. The vendors at the trade show, I had them all laughing at me. They were just laughing. They said, this got to be your first trade show. I said, yes, because I would go up to these guys. I was like, so how much are these jeans right here? And they was like, well, we our price is $12.90 a pair. I was like, hold on, wait a minute, man. You telling me these jeans are $12.90? They sell these back home in St. Louis for $50 a pair. You telling me these are $12.90? I was loud, brother. I was crazy. We all had fun. They had fun with me. I had fun with them. I met black people that were living in China. It was just blowing me away.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm from St. Louis. You know, I've been a few places in the United States. But I'm in this trade show, and now I'm talking to people that's international, and they're walking up to me. Where are you from, brother? I'm from St. Louis. And they're shaking my hand. These people are from all over the world. We met people from China, from Africa. I mean, it just blew me away. Then I went to the international side of the trade show, and I was talking to, you know, now you have to buy by containers. This is the side where they only sell by containers. And so I'm looking at shoes by the container, and I'm looking at some really nice styles with no names on it. They didn't have no name branded on it. So I'm like, man, these look really nice. How much are these? And they were like, well, we sell these, your cost would probably be about $5, $4. I'm like, huh? Five and four? And
exactly.
I say, so
exactly.
can I order like 20 dozen? They were like, oh, no. Container only.
No.
Container only. And so I was learning so much language that, you know, when you own the retail side of it, you only if you ain't been to school for this business, for retail or any business, you don't know the language. The man said, well, turnkey. I was like, okay, where the lock at? So, I mean, I was being so transparent because I needed for everybody that came in contact with me to teach me. And I learned so much from that first, the international trade shows, and Las Vegas is just the hub for trade shows
It's just where it all goes down in Las Vegas. So, I mean, for you to be on here and talking about international trade and then trade shows, period. I mean, I'm sitting back and I'm like, man, I want to know, but that's why I want to ask you, what was your very first experience like when you went to your very first trade show?
The same thing that you had.
It was the same thing.
Listen. Okay, so here's the thing. So my uncle is from Mali, okay, and he married a lady from Kenya, and they had this beautiful store in Seattle on Broadway called Uzuri. Cece, did you remember Uzuri?
I was in Tacoma, really. So Seattle area, like 20 years. Was it born 20 years ago? More than 20 years ago?
Yes.
Okay, then I would not know.
But okay. So the I quit. I was making $120,000 a year doing some corporate job. Same kind of international trade thing. But I really wanted to learn, again, I want to just keep on my quest to learn this international trade. And so I told my uncle and his wife, I said, listen, why don't you hire me and, you know, so I can kind of learn about how this is working. And she said, listen, she said, we know how much you make at this corporate job. What I can offer you at this shop is just nothing. I said, well, couldn't you offer me a commission? She says, well, yeah, I could, but the salary would be so low. I said, I don't care about the salary. Just make a decent commission. So she said, 10% commission on anything I sell and $8 an hour. She said, now I know you're going to say no. And I pulled my calculator out. I added 10% on everything. I said, oh, no, I'll take the job. I think it was 120 days later, she was paying me about, I don't know, $8,000 check in a month. She said, listen, we got to renegotiate. So now they were keeping some things secret. So they're teaching me a little bit at a time, And I'm trying to figure out this lady is a genius. Now, they call it an African import shop, but inside they got stuff from Afghanistan, this and that. And I said, I'm sitting here at the store with her. I know she's not traveling to all these places. How is she making all these contacts? Then finally, I was privileged after 5 years. 5 years of making a whole bunch of money there for her. And then she said, okay, I'm going to take you to one of my trade secrets. And she took me to the Seattle Gift Show. I had the same experience. I went up to every booth. I said, now listen. Now, I knew a little bit about the business because I was working with her. But I said,
right.
So listen, how many do I have to buy and what's my volume discount? But inside, I was in shock. And I said to myself,
right.
I've been sitting over here on the retail side, standing up and walking around all day selling one item at a time when I could have been here selling container loads. I said, uh-uh. The whole time I was having an epiphany in there. I kept it a little quiet only because I've been in the industry. But believe me, I wanted to scream and shout and say, why you mother? Oops. Why people didn't tell me this? Why you didn't tell me this? So then I made a plan, a strategic plan. I said, over the next 24 months, I'm switching from retail and wholesale. Because like you said, I went in there, people from Afghanistan, people from Russia, people from China, people from Nepal. Everybody had a booth. I said to myself, out of 400 booths, though, every time I go, even today, there's only one or two African booths, nothing permanent. And so that's why we're creating open booths. If we want to unify our people, we need to be a permanent representation at all these trade shows every month that they're in existence.
Exactly.
You know, selling all our goods.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that's why we have to get the information out.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
We've been back and forth to Chicago a lot, and I've been, you know, really trying to dig into the trade in Chicago, because Chicago is a really huge city, and I really slept on how huge Chicago is and the amount of money flowing through that city on trade, you know. So they have trade shows in Chicago. I actually titled Chicago,
the next best thing to Las Vegas, you know, because they literally have a lot of different trade shows in Chicago, and a lot of they're smaller trade shows. They're not on the large scale, but they're smaller trade shows, and it's opening up to. I'm seeing something different about Chicago. There's private companies are doing their own trade shows, like companies that may buy a lot of off-price stuff. Well, they're now in Chicago. They may have 20 or 30 vendors, and when you go into their establishment, but they call that a trade show. And it's just so much that's going on in Chicago. I don't know if you've been to Chicago or any events in Chicago, but okay, good. So you know, Chicago really has it going on, and I mean, and it's just Chicago's people need to know, huh? Say that again.
I say I agree with you. Chicago's popping. There's about I found about 9 states that are just kicking. You know, that you could really just make some money in. Some of them because strategic location, and then some of them because of the population mix. But there's some of them that are just hot.
Yeah, when you get next to the water though, boy, that's when you get the prices super low. And I just, you know, like in New York, when I go, I haven't been in New York in a while, but I know when I do go to New York, and I really we need to go to New York because the prices in New York are just on the. I'm talking on the wholesale side. I ain't talking trade show. But on the wholesale side, the prices in New York is ridiculously lower than anywhere I've ever been to purchasing on wholesale. Now, I haven't been to a trade show in New York simply because the cost of everything is so sky high, you know. And for me, Las Vegas and Chicago just make sense. We're 4 hours away from Chicago, and you know, Vegas. I can jump on a plane to Vegas in the next 30 days or so and only spend round trip and hotel with a car maybe $600 tops, you know. And we're talking
let's let the brother make his final comments and tell everyone how they can actually connect with him if they would like more information, because we're at the top of the hour. We definitely want to invite you back on, Brother Mansa Musa, so that you can really get into the meat and potatoes of everything on a regular basis. Because again, I think we have to, you know, just kind of spoon feed everybody this information so they can get used to it. So let them know how they can get a hold of you.
Yeah.
All right. You can go to our website, www.ufumbuzi, that's UFUMBIBUZI TSG.com, UFUMBUZI TSG.com. UFUMBUZI is a Swahili word that means the solution. And the solution is for Africans to unite. So you can reach us on our website. Let's join the team and build trade and connect the dots with Africans around the world. Come to our website and join the team.
All right. Well, thank you, brother, for coming on with us. You are welcome back here at any time to talk about what it is that you're doing, and we will be happy to facilitate that conversation. We'll talk again soon. Thank you for joining us on Blacks in Business Radio.
Thank you, my brother.
My pleasure. Thank you, Hotep.
Okay, you all. We are going to go into our second break in our last hour. You're listening to Blacks in Business Radio on Black Talk Radio Network. We'll be right back after these messages.
Black Talk Radio, your choice for digital black radio. New black media for the new millennium.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Blacks in Business Radio. I am one of your hosts, Sister Cece, and Brother Robert, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay, perfect. Yep. All right.
Yep. I'm here. I'm here.
All right. Well, that was a wonderful guest because, you know, we just really, really, really need to be thinking outside the box, especially now with the economy changing. You know, there's a lot of people that are going to be cut off from certain assistances, you know, and we have just kind of grown accustomed to these certain things a certain way. But as the economy is changing, we have to change. You know, it's not that we have to be broken poor and struggling. You know, we can actually use this opportunity to rise above, you know, what it is that we've been fed. So I thank that brother for coming on and sharing that information. And hopefully we can connect with him more times than today. And I thank you, Brother Robert, for having that information, because I know I did not know what I know until I knew you. So I'm just so thankful. Yeah, so that was good. What did you think?
Huh? I said, you're more than welcome, CC.
Okay. So what did you think about that information? Is international trade something you'd like to engage in? Are you thinking one day you would like to have a booth yourself at the flea market, at the trade show? The trade show.
Yes. Yes, and yeah, definitely. You know, you sales, and that's something I did discuss with him, the whole notion of why you should be in sales. I mean, you know, so yes, he just took it on a whole nother level. I like how he the whole idea of trading on a whole nother level, wholesale, caught him, and that that's where I did not gravitate towards that idea per se. You know, I inquired about booths at the trade show, this, that, and other. But you know, when you're down here on this retail end, you kind of get stuck, and you know, until you evolve in your thinking, you stay here, and it's a good money in retail. I mean, on this level, it's great money, but on the wholesale side where he's at, you don't deal with what we deal with on a daily. As he said, he's dealing with guys from all over the world. These are business owners that would say, okay, give me a trailer load of that and a trailer load of that. See, that right there will make you really want to stay into sales. You know what
I'm
saying?
Well, like he said, they're not stopping at your booth unless they're interested versus, you know, you got someone looking. Yeah, and that's a whole nother level of buying, you know, because you know that you definitely are going to have some buyers, not just in your city, not just in your state, not even just in your country. You have buyers from around the world, and that is some serious power right there. So for all of you that are listening and would like more information, make sure that you reach out to him. You can also reach him on Skype. I mean, that's how I found him. Well, that's not how I found him, but that's how I talked to him. You just type in Mansa Musa and you will find him, and you can message him on Skype. But go to his website and look him up and see what they're doing. I mean, his LinkedIn page is very elaborate. I was like, oh, Lord, like what part of this do I copy and paste over? This is a lot of information. But I mean, what he's doing is a big deal. You know, he has decided to remove himself from this country. And, you know, he is from Louisiana. He's from Louisiana. He lived in Seattle, he grew up in Seattle. I did not know him in Seattle, but that's where I was reaching out to him, was when I was in Seattle. It took me 2 years to catch up with this man. Oh, maybe it's been two. No, it took me 3 years to catch up with this man, because I've been trying to get a hold of him before I even met you. I've been trying to get a hold of him to do an interview with him because I thought he was actually in Seattle. He's not living in Seattle, but he still does visit in Seattle. He does go back and forth, you know, in and out of the United States. But I mean, it just took me forever. And then just one day, boom, I was able to connect with him. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have been trying to get a hold of you forever. And he just laughed because he knew it was true. But he said, that's the thing. People think that he's in the United States. And sometimes it's kind of hard to connect with him because of the internet, blah, 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 all that stuff. So I was just happy to bring him on so that people can hear exactly what it is that he's doing. And get involved. Get involved in trade shows. Robert has been telling you that stuff all along. But now international trade and getting something to sell and bringing it over. I mean, that's just a big deal. You know, we got to broaden our minds and stop thinking about what's across the street. You know, we really have to go across the water and just be doing business like that. I'm super excited. Anyways, wait, by the way, you all need to get your passport. We talked about that before too. If you don't have your passport, you need to get your passport. If you need information on getting your passport, message us. We are blacksinbusiness@gmail.com. We will help you with that, all right? We're not going to do it for you, but we'll help you with that information, all right? So what we need to do now is we need to go into our next segment, our last hour. And anybody listening, if you want to chime in, feel free to press ** and you can come in. But let's go ahead and introduce our next guest. Brother Robert, do you have the information there so you can talk about our next guest?
Oh, I just got off the page.
Well, that's okay. I'll go ahead. Okay, so this is called Return the Favor Home Care Services, LLC. This is Sister Khadija Mahdi, was born and raised in New York City. She has been married to her husband, Ahmad Mahdi, for 30 years. She has one daughter, 5 stepchildren, and 12 grandchildren. Khadija taught for approximately 30 years in the private and public schools. The idea of opening a home care business began with her daughter, Aisha Mahdi, who is the president of Return the Favor Home Care Services, and daughter-in-law, Kenia Mahdi, in 2016. Khadija is the vice president of the company. Khadija stated that they wanted to give quality, loving, and compassionate care to the elders. Their motto is honoring those who raised us. After attending a conference in Sarasota, Florida, they opened their office in September of that year. The office is located at 5621 Delmar, Suite 104F in St. Louis, Missouri. The services they provide are lighthouse keeping, laundry, dressing and grooming, taking elders shopping and to their doctor's appointments, medication reminders, meal preparation, companionship, etc. They tailor the care plan to the client's needs. Return the Favor Home Care Services accepts private pay clients, Medicaid clients, through the Consumer Direct Services Program. They also provide home care services for veterans and surviving spouses. The veterans program is called American Veterans Care Connection. Their office is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And their phone number, for those of you that need it here in St. Louis, area code 314-361-2950. You can find them on Facebook at facebook.com/returnthefavorhomecare. And then their website is rtfhhomecare.com. You can email them at rtfhhomecare. Let me start over. Lord, this is very small on my phone. rtfhomecare. There it is. rtfhomecare@gmail.com. Okay. So if you need that information again, we will give it again at the end of the hour. But let's go ahead and welcome on Sister Khadija.
Hi. Can you hear me, Cece?
Greetings, Sister Khadija. How are you?
Greetings. I would like to thank Sister Cece for inviting me. My daughter should be on, and my daughter-in-law, they may want to chime in, to speak on Blacks in Business and sharing information about our company.
Yes. Well, I see Kenia on, but your daughter is not here, so you might want to text her and she can come in at any time. It's fine.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm, you know, she's coming from work right now.
Oh, shoot. I know about that. Okay. Okay. Well, again, we thank you for coming on, and we also have Brother Robert on. You all can greet each other. Sister Khadija, Brother Robert.
Assalamu alaikum, sister.
Walaikum assalam. How are you?
I'm fine. And you?
I'm doing great, doing great. Very excited, and I just met Cece last week, and I mean, it's just wonderful, it's just powerful. So I see that the both of you are empowering African Americans and others that are listening about what's going on in St. Louis, and I listened in on the last person, Mansa Musa. And he talked about the language of the business and going into this home care business from teaching is a whole different language. So, I just wanted to share that before we continue it on.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. Well, we thank you for chiming in. And if you, we talked before, if you would like to reach out to Mansa Musa, I am happy to share the information with you. And I'll happily share the show with you, too, so you can go back and listen. But tell us about your teaching career. You've been teaching for quite some time. What made you want to become a teacher?
Oh, I could see myself when I was about 5 or 6 years. I guess 6 years old, because so many years ago, I'm not going to say how many years ago, so many years ago, children didn't start school until we were about 6 years old. So I think I was about 7. And I just liked the idea of the teacher talking to us. And then she let us come up to the board. And from that moment, I said I wanted to be a teacher. At 7 years old, 6 or 7.
Wow. Wow. Now, how was that dream facilitated in your family?
Well, I'll just take it from the what I'm thinking. Well, my mom only had like a 3rd, 4th grade education. My father had 10th grade education. I was born and raised in New York City. So my mom, because of the fact that they migrated from the South to the North, they're looking at the opportunities that the North would bring, and especially during that time, we're talking about the late 50s. I know, we're talking about really the early 50s. And they wanted a better education. They wanted us to have better education. And so the push from my mom and my dad was to go to school, and then once you finish school, go to college. So we got that support.
Oh, okay. So basically because they saw themselves at a deficit, you know, by not having that education and that educational push, they just wanted to make sure that their children went forth and did something great in education.
Yes, and we all did.
I absolutely believe that's wonderful. So when you went through the process of becoming a teacher, when did you decide, okay, I might want to segue into something else? Was that kind of a fluke, or you just kind of always knew that you'd want to be doing something else?
Well, I kind of knew I wanted to be doing, and I'm laughing now because when you say, was that a fluke? I remember growing up in New York City, and I just want to throw out that I lived a few blocks from Mosque Number 7 and Tipper Number 7, Mosque Number 7 in New York. And so I was 21 years old when I converted to Islam. And while I was there, we put together an adult education program, and I was going to college at that time. So then I was part of the adult education program, and then I continued on in college. I went to Kingsborough Community College. I went to City College in New York. And then when I finished, primarily I was going for a degree in psychology. That didn't happen because job opportunities were not as great as they are today. I'm really talking about the early 70s. When I finished high school, early 70s, college, by the 80s. So fast forward to me meeting my husband in North Carolina and then moving here to St. Louis, then I began to work at the Claire Muhammad School that we have here. And then I went to another Islamic school, immigrant school in West County, Al-Salam Day School, and Confluence Academy, St. Louis Public Schools, that sort of thing. And what made us get into the business was that my daughter and daughter-in-law, Kenya, they kept talking about, yeah, we need to do something for, you know, do a family business together. And so they put together all the information, and then they said, well, we may have to do more things. Why don't we just go ahead and get a package deal together? And so they were doing the research, and I was still teaching at that time. And so they said, Mom, come on, I'm still teaching. Because they kept talking about it. They were so serious about it. And so then what put the icing on the cake was that they put together a nice presentation of home care and how they saw that, how they thought that home care should be. Because they felt that, and we still feel that it is our obligation and duty as loving children to make sure our parents and elders we come into contact get the best care as they age. So we just kept talking about this, and so we decided to go to a presentation in Sarasota, Florida, that which is called 21st Century, that deals primarily with home care and home health care. And so that was in 2016. So then that.
So you all attended that presentation?
We all attended the presentation together. Yes.
Okay.
We were there for about 4 nights and 5 days.
Okay. So after you attended the presentation, did you think, wow, yes, this is something that we need to go forth and do? Or were you a mixed bag? Or were you like, oh, Lord, I don't know what I'm getting into? How did you feel?
I felt like, let's go. We were all like, okay. We were all in it together. We said, let's go. And that's what we did.
Wow.
We put our minds together. We met like once or twice a week. And when we went to, well, before going to the conference, they sent us like about 6 or 7 binders.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a whole set of binders here, and Kenya and I, we began to make copies because Aisha lives in Atlanta, Georgia. So we began to make the copies, and we sent Aisha the information she needed so that we would be on a conference call like we are now, and we would discuss things that were in these binders to get our minds together to learn the home care business, because we didn't know anything.
Right. And that is amazing to me, because I've seen your flyers and everything that's all put together. You would think that you guys been in the business for 25 years.
No, ma'am. Just since 2016.
Oh, well, that's a blessing to be able to have the heart and entrepreneurial drive and the passion to take care of our elders, because we know that the whole business exists because it is needed. Now, it's needed, but is it ever properly done? That's kind of hard to say, because me, myself, I became a caregiver, I think, in 2007 or 8, somewhere around there. And I just remember thinking, this is not right how this is being done, you know, because you see so many things going by the wayside. You see from the corporate level, like the stealing, you see the abuse of the adults, you see the mismanagement of the care, you see you see so many different things. And if you are passionate about caring for others, you automatically want to do something. And some people do step out, as you all did, and open their own business, but then some people just kind of sit silently and not know what they should do. So it's very commendable that you all stepped out and did what you did.
Yes, and I want to say, basically, because we all have that kind of heart, the heart, my daughter's, you know, she's never really been a disrespectful child. My daughter-in-law, you know, loving and just, you know, nobody works together 100%, but in terms of the respect level that these young ladies have, and that's why I stepped into it as an older person. And I would also like to add that what brought us into the business is we're passionate about enhancing the healing process of the seniors, not letting them go by the wayside, and our veterans. You know, we want to help them strengthen their mental and physical abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're a non-medical companion care company, but we really pride ourselves with listening and being compassionate to the seniors that we serve.
That's so important, because I think a lot of times, because they are seniors, people feel like they sort of have the upper hand. I don't even know if it's subliminal or not, but it's just something that happens. The younger generation tends to start trying to boss them around as if they have no power. And it's like, hey, they've been on this earth way longer than you. You need to chill out a little bit and listen to what they want. Even if the client has, you know, a dementia or some sort of memory loss or whatever, they still deserve the utmost respect, you know. But unfortunately, there are people in the business, whether it be corporately or, the workers, you know, they tend to forget that foundational respect that is needed. And, you know, I'll admit, too, when I was a caregiver in the very beginning, I kind of thought I needed to be the bossy boss to the person, too, because it's like, OK, well, hey, they hired me on to do this, so I must need to control everything, you know. So I kind of thought that way. And I don't know when it finally came around to me. I think it was probably my second private client that I had, older Black lady. I loved her. Oh, my goodness. She was in Seattle, and she Now, before I knew who the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was, she had this picture on her dresser, and it was like a newspaper clipping of him. And then she said that was her father. Now, I kind of knew something, but I'm like, okay, how is this man her father? I mean, I knew he was somebody, but I didn't really know. But, you know, and she would hold it up to her face and she'd say, see, look at our nose. Our nose is the same, you know. But I knew she was sliding into dementia. So I would ask her daughter, okay, is this really her dad? You know, so we used to kind of play around with that a little bit. But in caring for her full time by myself and seeing the children not really stepping in where they needed to step in, it just kind of gave me a different heart. You know, I was just like, wow, you know, these people are just kind of treating her as if she has no say, you know, so that just kind of made me just really have, you know, fresh eyes for the situation. And I just decided, hey, you kind of need to shut up and you kind of just need to listen. So what is it that she wants? I don't care if it's something different within the next 5 minutes. You know, you need to really listen to what she wants. She's been here for a long time and she deserves to get what she wants. Even if it's five cups of water in 3 hours, whatever it is, she deserves to have that. So, I mean, it's just, it's so much in this business that needs to be said and needs to be done. And if you can have a good agency and if you can have great caregivers, I mean, you just are really on the right path. And your name just says it all. I mean, I know you all have a passion for it. So if people in the St. Louis area, let's say if I have a father and he's aging and I'm really starting to get concerned, when is it that we should seek out caregiving services?
Okay, I want to start by saying that for our elders, you know, they still have wisdom, and like you mentioned, CC, we should treat them with the utmost respect. I think that some of the signs or the signs that we can notice in our parents as they age, and my mom is 84 now, and I just went to see her last year. And one of the things I always like to look for, are they still keeping their house up? And so that was a big check, or that, you know. And then when you talk to the elder, or you know, your parents that are over, I would say 75, are they coherent? Are they making, you know, are they asking you, saying the same thing over and over? Also, are they eating? You know, are they sleeping? Do they have? Are they taking too many medications? These are some of the things to look for. And if they're driving, you know, are they getting in accidents? You know, I don't mean to joke about that, but they're starting to lose a grip on being able to maintain themselves. And so one of the first things probably is to take the elder to a doctor and have them, you know, reevaluated, because most elders, now, and I know a lady who's 93 years old, and she takes no medication. She's not a vegetarian, but she takes herbs and she, you know, she keeps literature on her. And that's another thing that I wanted to talk about was to make sure that if the elders are not eating right, that's another thing, then that causes a decline in their health. And the diet is the thing that's pushing a lot of our seniors into Alzheimer's. Or dementia, or Alzheimer's. So that's one of the things that you can start, you know, start looking to see if they're able to maintain their homes, those sort of things.
And those are good markers, because you know, if you are familiar with your elder, then you know, okay, well, usually, you know, she takes her trash out every day, and now the trash is piling up, and you know, okay, well, is she not taking the trash out because she's forgetting? Is she not taking the trash out because she's afraid because something happened when she went outside?
That's another thing.
Is she not taking the trash out because her foot is swollen up? You know, there's several different things that, you know, we have to be looking out for when we are dealing with the elders. So that's really good. Now, Brother Robert, you have some experience with your grandmother. Did you want to chime in anywhere?
Yeah, I do. There's a lot of things that people who are thrown into the responsibility of caring for an elder such as myself. I just didn't know and wasn't aware of the help that was out there for myself. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that may be listening to the show that is not aware, especially with men. We don't usually know this type of stuff. Women, you guys, you all are already into the care industry because if you're raising children, you got
right.
certain information, you know. So, but us as men, the providers, I didn't have a clue. So I took care of my grandmother for 7 years, and only had help come in like 4 hours a day. That's what the state allowed.
Right.
And
with the Medicaid.
And I'm gonna tell you, I literally lost everything, including my mind. You know, because it's so much work when you are so unaware of what's available to you as a caregiver. And so for me, I would just like for you to at least tell people that may be in that position something that they can do, some help that's out there for them, working along with your facility or independently, you know. However, what could a person, a man or a woman, do in the position that they are thrown into, caring for an elderly loved one, and they don't know where to start to look for the help?
Okay, one of the things that they can do is call our office, which is 314-361-2950. And because every individual is different, and depending on the level of care that the individual may need, then that's something that we could talk about. And once we do that, because I helped a few families to qualify for Medicaid, and there's a limit in terms of the amount of income that person can have in order to qualify for Medicaid. Then we also do private pay for those who may make $1 or $2 or $3, $5, $10 above the threshold of receiving Medicaid. So that means that the income that they have to use that income to pay their rent, buy the groceries, doctor's appointments, and so on, food, and so on and so forth. So for those individuals, then we say we can set up something like a private pay system where a caregiver could come into the home maybe 2 to 3 times a week for about 2 to 8 hours a week. And you'd be surprised if that caregiver is a caring person, and that's what, you know, I pride myself on wanting to do, is not to hire people to go into the homes. They're thinking they're going to go down there and go to the people's home and watch soap operas or whatever. One of the things that we do is we have training, and some of the training for the caregivers, and I talk to them. And I want to digress for 1 minute, but I'll get back on some of the things that we do help, you know, in that vein. I had a person call me who wanted to work with my company, and so they were referred by another agency. And when I heard the person talk, the person was about my young age, and they was it was like a disconnect in terms of the personality. Mm-hmm. That person was younger than me. I just didn't feel a spiritual connection. Mm-hmm. And so I left it alone. And then when I talked to the person today, they, you know, we fixed the schedule for them to come to the office. And then they called me early and said, can I come early? I said, no, because I have another appointment. And so then the person said, okay. And, you know, it's just the way, it wasn't that bad, okay, but it was just like they was turning me off. You understand what I'm saying? When I rushed back to the office to still meet that person, I said, well, maybe I'm being a little judgmental. I said, to meet that person, and I was there at the time. I was there 10 minutes earlier. The person never showed up.
So I said, thank God. You know what I mean?
That's a clue right there. Yeah.
So I said, thank God. But I do want to, Brother Robert and Sister Cece, I want to say that some of the trainings that, you know, that we do that came into our package, that's one new thing about 21st century that came into our, they gave us all the binders on how to hire people, how to set up the office, and also the workshops. So some of the workshops that we have are personal care, diabetes, Alzheimer's, depression, abuse, and neglect to be able to tell if their elder has been abused, end-of-life information, heart disease, infection control, how to keep your hands clean, you know, washing your hands, malnutrition, mental illness, nutrition, and it's more. But those are some of the ones that we started out working with the caregivers so that they can get an understanding that they're going to take care of a person, you know, and if they don't care about their parents, care, you know, I want you to, you know, care about this person that you're going to work with.
Yes, and there's so many things to that, like I keep saying, because I know for me, just somebody who smokes, I just don't think that they belong in the environment of, I don't even care if that client smokes. I don't care about that. I think that the client deserves the best representation of a caregiver that there is. You know, they should be able to get down on the floor and clean up something if something spills. They shouldn't come looking very disheveled, like, you know, something's crazy. Mm-hmm. They need to come put together because you might have to take this person out in the public. And another thing I've noticed is some people don't mind if the caregiver is wearing scrubs, but some people do mind because they have a certain dignity about them. They don't want to feel like they have a medical care person with them. And that's something you have to talk with the person about. I mean, all these things are key for the person having the best care possible. Like my lady, you know, she's looks wonderful every single day, and she, you know, you never see her looking down at all. So I know that when I go out with her, I need to make sure that I look, you know, I look a certain kind of way. She doesn't say anything because she's so appreciative of me being there. But at the same time, I know the caliber of woman that she is. So I want to make sure that I look as, you know, I look very favorable. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly.
But all these things really matter. I mean, my biggest thing really, really, really is that cigarette thing. Because I cannot stand cigarettes. So if you are a caregiver and you're taking smoke breaks and you're coming in, you're smelling like smoke, what is that doing to your client on a physiological and spiritual level? You think about that? You know, probably not, because they're not really thinking about what it does to themselves. So, I mean, you know, I need a sort of a selfless person to be caring for my elder, you know, and those are things that we even have to teach the parent, the children to look for, you know, like the children of the elder, you know, there's certain things that they should be looking for in a caregiver. And you shouldn't just take somebody that an agency shoves at you because that person was available and they need some money. No, you should be interviewing that person and find out who this is that will spend 4 to 10 hours with your parent every week. You should be knowing this information. Because guess what? One day, you too will be an elder. And you want somebody looking out for you.
Yes, that reminds me of a sign that I saw, Cece. I saw a sign when I was going to the high school up on, I'm trying to think of the high school right now, but I was going to McClure North. I was just up there yesterday, and there was a sign as I was driving, and the sign said, drive like your children were walking in the street, you know, like, you know, like your own children are walking in the street. So that's the same thing. And before we finish, I don't know if you wanted to ask me anything else, but I do want to tell you a little bit about the program that we began to work with, which is called Africans Helping Africans.
Oh, talk to us about Africans Helping Africans. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, the program Africans Helping Africans started with, a dear friend of mine, and when I'm almost going to get choked up about it, she heard about me and my daughters talking about opening a home care business. And I used to work at a Pomoja preparatory school. And I left there, I think, in 2014.
And anyway, I had been going back like for the 2015 year before we started the business. But anyway, long story short, she heard about us, and so she called me a few times, and then we talked. And so she talked to the principal, who was Sean Nichols, and he said, come on over and talk to some of the staff about this initiative, because there were some seniors who used to come and volunteer at the school. And they started facing ailments. I don't want to name the ailments, but they began mm-hmm. to face ailments where they needed someone to come in and to assist them. And mm-hmm. so what the school did was they began to give donations. And we raised something like about $600-$700 from the school and members of outside that were connected with these elders. And so I began to send a few of the caretakers, and along with myself, we would go into the home and we would either take them grocery shopping, doctor's office, and I still do it, so that they didn't, because they don't have extra money. And so this is something that we began to do. And then I had went to the African Arts Festival, gave out information, people began to donate. I think I collected from donations from the 3 days at the African Arts Festival something like $200-something. And I also met a young lady who's been with me ever since last year. She came in as a volunteer and to help me with this venture. So every other week, she's in college now, she'll come to the office and she does work. So this young lady who started this Muwembe Bynum, Africans Helping Africans, I would like to take it to the next level, and she just passed on in January. So I would like to, I think early February, late January, so I would like to continue with this. And for those who would like to give a donation, we do have a GoFundMe. I didn't mention that. We do have a GoFundMe page where we haven't raised that much money, but some people did donate to that program. And I'm very passionate about that as well, because I know the individuals. I try to see them, if not once a week, every other week, along with the 93-year-old. And so just to help freshen up their restrooms, they don't have the energy anymore because of their illness. You know, mm-hmm. So that's what I want to say. So it's Africans Helping Africans.
Okay, so they just go to, what did you say, it's a GoFundMe?
Yeah, they can go to the GoFundMe. They can make any donation, you know, however they want. $5, $5,000.
$5 million? Whatever.
Right, Cece, I like you.
We're trying to get it going here. Yes. We can't do it with nickels and dimes. You know, well, we can, but, you know, it's easier to get our goal going if we can get that $5 million, $5 billion going. So you never know who's listening. So you all go to her GoFundMe. It's called Africans Helping Africans. I mean, it's a wonderful, wonderful thing that you're doing. You know, let me see. Did your daughter come? No, your daughter, she must be still trying to get herself together. But we got Kenya there. She's on the line. Kenya, if you want to come on and speak to us, feel free to press star. Hey, we see you there. You know why I know it's her? Because I see that 907 Alaska number there. It's her. That's funny. Kenya is her daughter-in-law, you all, and I actually met her in Costco. And I mean, I just wouldn't have even thought that a year later we have this great connection, and here we are today. She's there. Let's see. Yes, Kenya, are you on?
Oh, hello. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Welcome.
Yeah, we can hear you.
No, I was just coming on and say, you know, thank you for this opportunity for interviewing, you know, RTF. Mama Khadija is doing great work with the business, and it's beautiful. It's lovely. Just, you know, going to the, you can correct me, Mama Khadija, when you were throwing the banquet, you know, just to raise money to help the elders who don't have the money to be able to have someone come into the home to, you know, have that mm-hmm. companion care. I call them personal assistants, you know, because like you said earlier, you know, with the scrub situation, you know, you don't want someone looking like a medical profession who's caring for them where they feel like they ain't able to do anything for themselves. So mm-hmm. I just mm-hmm. want to say it's just great to, you know, see it grow and see you out here doing your thing with the business and just, you know, the whole African Helping Africans, just raising the funds to get elder care personal care into the homes of those elders who cannot afford it, which is so amazing. Yeah. So thank you for, you know, your hard work and bringing this to the community. It's really nice.
Yeah, thanks, Kenya. And I'm glad she mentioned that. We did have a program. And, can I, okay. Am I okay?
Okay, there we go.
Okay. I'm glad she mentioned that because we did have the Center for Divine Love. It's on the south side. And the Reverend Tumpe, she had allowed us to have that program there for free. And we raised almost $700, and it was just a blessing, you know. So,
wow, that is a blessing. Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm hoping that you can get funds all the time. Like, just keep your GoFundMe up, and just, you know, because some people, they reach their goal. But I think that if you can have, you know, like you do in your banquets, I don't know if you do that yearly or
we're going to do it again. Hopefully, God willing, in April. We want to do it again in April.
Okay, well, Blacks in Business would love to be involved in that because, you know, what you're doing is so important to our community, especially when you speak about the elders that can't afford, you know, because I don't know what people think, you know, but this stuff is not easy to navigate. And then if you have nobody in your family helping you put these things together and you're an elder person, you just go without. Yeah. You just say, forget it. I mean, you just leave it alone. But the government within itself, even if you have somebody helping you navigate the system, it's not easy. Because if you're a person and you're not making a whole lot of money, you're living off your husband's pension and they cut it in half because he died and all this other stuff, you're living off of almost nothing. And then because you own property, they want to have you do the government spend down, where I think means they're going to take your house once you pass away. Yeah. Is that what that is?
It's a whole lot to, you know, like I said, when I first started, it's like a whole new education. And the more I find out about it, even if you now what people have to do, you have to look at the picture long range. Like Mansa Musa, I'm talking about it differently. He was talking about in terms of going into business, trying to buy wholesale, all of this, and, you know, he had to learn how to do that. And the same thing, even with the Medicaid, if someone has assets, right, they almost have to really get rid of the assets, not 1 year, 2 year, three, almost 5 years before. And that's, it's like you almost, like the sister said, you almost have to be half dead. And I can't talk about Medicaid too much, but I don't want to talk about too much because they're helping to pay me. But in terms of, you know, you can, it's just, you have to be aware. You have to study. And this is for, hopefully, if there's younger people that are listening, begin to broaden your horizon. Get into, start listening to Blacks in Business. Because that's going to take them to a whole different level in terms of financially, how they would live out their older years. If you're starting off not having that much money now and you don't think money is important, that's, you know, but anyway, you know what I mean. That it's an indictment on us not even being able to leave something for our children. And so we, you know, it's a lot that has happened to us as a people, but I digress.
Well, we have to definitely teach how to leave something for our children, even if we haven't prepared those things for ourselves. I mean, the lessons are out here now. We have no reason to be at any sort of deficit of learning because the information's out here, you know, like this program, this is what we strive to do every single week. I mean, even if you can't listen live, it's on podcasts. You can go to blacktalkradionetwork.com and look for Blacks in Business Radio, or you can just Google Blacks in Business Radio, BIB Radio. You can look us up and listen to it anytime. If you're thinking about starting a business and you have no idea where to start, if you don't know what your skill set is, you don't know what you like because you've been locked in a job for 500 years, we will help you with that stuff. You just have to email us at weareblacksinbusiness@gmail.com. We would love to consult with you, either myself or Brother Robert. Combined, we've been in business over 40,000 years, I think. Something like that. So, So if you reach out to us and you need resources, I am the infopreneur. Yes. That is what they call me. I like to find out different information for people. I bet you whatever it is that you're trying to figure out, I can help you figure it out. So just reach out to us. We are blacksinbusiness@gmail.com anytime. We will happily get back with you. So, yes, Brother Robert, you're kind of silent. What are you thinking about right now?
No. I'm, you know, just, you know, I love people who love people, you know, and I mean, this is definitely a subject that's very near and dear to me. And, again, for anybody that's out there that has been thrown into the caregiving role because of whatever that may have caused that to happen, you know, you don't need to think that you're by yourself or alone. You know, this is where you find out. This is where you realize you have to come to realize that what you are doing is not for everybody in your family to do. They wasn't chosen to do this.
That's right.
The ones who are doing it, if you stepped up to the plate, then be able to understand that you stepped up to the plate, and not you and the other family members. You stepped up to the plate. So don't look for the help. Just if the help comes, be thankful that it did come and keep on pushing like you're doing right now. But also with that, reach out to the sister Khadijah and call her, because she can help you walk that journey. You ain't got to walk that journey alone. And I can say that it can be very stressful if you walk it alone and you don't have the correct information. So, sister, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing what you know with our audience, because we as the people need to know. We just need to know. So thank you.
Yes.
And I do want to mention. I do want to mention one more thing too, is that the older, you know, we're living longer. You know, the older population, you know, we're living longer. So whereas 30, 40 years ago, life expectancy was like 60 or 70. Now people are living 80, 90 years old. So this is the in terms of the health care, a lot of us who are moving into our elder years, our senior years, we will need some home care if our health is not good or intact.
Absolutely, and we need to make sure that those things are put in place. You know, if this is the thing, it doesn't have to be just because you got old that you need home care. It could be because you had an accident, an unforeseen thing happened to you, and now you find yourself in need of care. Are we setting those things in place? No, we are not. I can tell you that. No, we are not. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure, again, that we listen to programs like this, because you can surely get the information you need to get the proper insurance that you need, so that if these things happen, then you will have everything set in place and you won't be scrambling around, you know, like we scramble around and do chicken dinners because somebody died. No, that's not. That stuff is totally not necessary. If you, what's the thing, Robert, with the proper planning? What is it?
Oh, the 5 P's. Proper preparation prevents poor performance.
There you go. See? So if you got those 5 P's in place, you are not at any sort of deficit. And you should start thinking about your parents, too. Because your parents, I know you think of them as your parents, but they are also adults that are getting older. So start planning with them on how things need to go down. Put some things in writing. Get those things in place early.
Yeah.
It is so important. It is so important, you know, because we just don't think about these things until it happens to us. And if we have those 5 P's in place, you're not caught off guard. So we got to do these things. I am also looking up some information, because caregivers also need to learn how to take care of themselves, you know, especially the ones that really go hard. You know, they're compassionate and they're trying to do everything. You know, caregivers tend to not care for themselves, and then they go in lack, and then they end up getting sick. So if you are a caregiver, you must learn how to take care of yourself. And I'm looking on the AARP website, and they have something called Taking Care of Those Who Need You is one of the most important roles you'll play.
Yeah.
We're here to help. Okay. So they have a guide to help you take care of yourself and you know, as you're doing this caregiving thing. So again, reach out to us. We can help you brainstorm. If you are out there and you're taking care of your mom and you pulling your hair out, you need a break, you're not understanding the government system and all these things going on, reach out to us. You know, you're not alone. You're not alone. We would love to help you. If you would like to start your own caregiving business, you may be in a different state, but I bet your sister Khadijah could help you with what it is that you need to start doing for that. She can tell you which seminars to attend, what state office you need to go to, or whatever. So make sure that you reach out to Sister Khadijah. Okay, so Sister Khadijah, for your consulting, how should they get a hold of you?
Okay, so they should just, they can call me or email me. The office number is 314-361-2950, or they can email us at rtfhomecare@gmail.com. And just state, you know, the nature of your call, and if you're interested in whatever they're interested in. If they're interested in home care for their parents, or they're interested in finding out about how they can set up a home care business, or whatever issues that they may have.
Even if they have an interest in talking to you about teaching, you know, if they're a teacher and they want some advice or whatever, because you've done it for so long, you know, surely they would be able to reach out to you for some advice on lesson plans, or, you know, what programs you use specifically for Black children, or, you know, if you got some little boys in your classroom and you just don't know what to do because they're not learning or whatever, however the system is set up, you know, they should be able to reach out to you for that, I'm quite sure. So what we want to do is give you the platform, you know, for some last words, and then we're going to get ready to end this show.
Okay, one of the things I did want to mention was about nutrition.
Okay.
And I have a fact sheet on Alzheimer's disease for 2016. And one of the first trainings that we give the caretakers are on Alzheimer's diseases. And one of the things that I wanted to mention is that Alzheimer's, which a lot of people don't realize, it's also related to how we eat and what we are putting in our body. And what happens is that, Alzheimer's is the most common form of dementia. And it affects a person's ability to carry out daily activities. And it affects parts of the brain that control thought, memory, and language. But I do want to say the two things that they found out was that in the person's brain cells, there are plaques. When plaques build up, if you look at how electricity moves across the power source, you know, from one point to the next, that's how it should be in our brains, right? Mm-hmm. But because plaque is built up because of what we eat, that sort of thing, then the plaque blocks the movement of messages through the brain, causing this memory loss, confusion, and personality changes. So, so I would like to I'm reading this paper here. They say there's no treatment, right? There's no cure. There's no cure, but they're giving people all kind of medication.
Right. So why are they giving you the medication then? If there's, I mean, you think that there's no cure? We know that things can be healed through food. We know that.
Right. Food. And it says exactly. And herbs and this. You and I, we still want to get together on this. Medications are available that may slow Alzheimer's, lessening the symptoms, but they are unable to stop or reverse the disease. So all of this medications and stuff that people are taking, what they need to do, and that's one of the things I point out to the caregivers and some of the seniors that I'm working with, that we have to change our eating habits. We can't be drinking beer. We can't be eating all of these fat foods that have McDonald's and all of these places. You have to really cook your fresh greens and to keep your body healthy, because those are what they call the FICO the phytonutrients, or I hope I'm saying that right, but nutrition plays a big part in this. And as I look at the senior that's 93 and the others that are in their early 80s, they're eating a good diet, you know. Mm-hmm. Even if they eat a little meat, they're not mm-hmm. eating meat every day. They're not buying all this processed foods. So
right.
I just wanted to. And also, there are many websites that they can look at. Like one of the ones that, it's many, but with the health. With the health is very, very, if people looked at that and they can see, they'll see where this young man talks about how he lost his parents and how his health began to go down. He's in his 30s, 40s, mm-hmm. 40 years old, and he's, you know, aging. So when he began to start eating a plant-based diet, you know, all that medication, and I'm not saying that you don't need any medication. Some medication is good for people for, you know, until they're able to eat right and talk to your doctors. Don't do this on your own.
We're not medical professionals.
Yeah,
we are not giving medical advice. We are talking to you about.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk to a doctor. But if we were to do this, then this will help us live longer. We'll have less ailments as we age. And I always go back to the 93-year-old lady that still drives. Okay.
Right. Well, we definitely want to make sure that the people reach out for the plethora of information that you have for them, because it's not just about a business, but it's about treating the whole person. So we just definitely thank you, Sister Khadija, for coming on. I look forward to talking to you later. We look forward to doing a commercial for you on here. And may your business be blessed in abundance. And we will definitely talk with you soon, okay?
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Brother Robert and Sister Cece. May God continue to bless you.
Yes. Well, thank you all for joining us this episode. Oh, sorry. Did you talk? You just say thank you. Okay. Thank you for. I'm hearing the station manager telling me I need to wrap it up, so that's why I'm in a rush. We can talk all night. But you all, thank you for joining us on Blacks in Business Radio. We're here every Thursday at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Join us next week at 7 o'clock p.m. All right. Thank you so much, and good night, everybody.
Okay. Good night. Bye bye.